It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, we are your public radio station, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have fair skies, 37 degrees. Out at the airport, they are showing 50% humidity, northwest wind 16, gusting to 23, and 10 miles of visibility. Coming up on the Midday Report, it is mountain goat hunting season in Kodiak. Kirsten Dobroth has a report. And KNBA's Rhonda McBride with a report on the Get Out the Vote for Alaska Natives. Also, a broadband project in the YK Delta has a new name as they begin to roll out this highly anticipated new system. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The prosecution's rested its case against Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes and four associates in their federal trial over their role in the U.S. Capitol insurrection last year. Jurors will now hear from the defense, which is expected to allow Rhodes to take the witness stand in his own defense against the charge of seditious conspiracy. Rhodes' attorneys have said they'll focus on their client's belief that then-President Donald Trump was going to invoke the Insurrection Act. Yesterday, jurors heard a recording days after the insurrection in which Rhodes is heard expressing frustration there wasn't a more forceful response during the siege. He also is heard saying he'd hang House Speaker Pelosi from the lamppost. There's a heightened level of alert over political violence in the run-up to the final day of voting in midterm elections after the attack last Friday on Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband at their San Francisco home. One prominent member of the U.S. House who's on the bipartisan select committee investigating the January 6th riot is seeking answers from U.S. Capitol Police. NPR's Claudia Grisales reports.
House Administration Committee Chairwoman Zoe Lofgren sent Capitol Police a five-page letter asking for more information regarding the agency's role in responding to the attack. Lofgren wants to know why additional steps were not taken to secure the safety of Pelosi and her family. Capitol Police have said the agency had access to cameras across the country tied to congressmembers' security, including for Pelosi's San Francisco home, but those were not being monitored at the time of the attack. However, police said they saw law enforcement activity later, and their officers responded to the scene to aid the investigation. Claudia Grisales, NPR News, Washington.
Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid's conceding election defeat. NPR's Daniel Estrin says Benjamin Netanyahu's returning to office just 1 year after he was unseated.
Lapid called Netanyahu and congratulated him on his victory. Lapid's office said he instructed his staff to prepare an organized transition of power. With the final votes counted, Netanyahu's right-wing party and his ultra-Orthodox and far-right allies have clinched a parliamentary majority of 64 seats in the 120-seat parliament. It's a major blow to the Jewish left wing in Israel. For right-wing Netanyahu, it's a stunning comeback for a man who was already the country's longest-serving prime minister and was chased from power last year amid corruption charges. The first world leader to congratulate Netanyahu was Hungary's autocratic leader Viktor Orban. Daniel Estrin, NPR News, Jerusalem.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre confirms U.S. officials have made contact with Brittany Griner, the basketball star in prison in Russia.
The State Department just confirmed that U.S. Embassy officials in Moscow were able to visit Brittany Griner today. We are told she is doing as well as can be expected under the circumstances.
Griner's been in jail since her arrest in February on cannabis possession charges. This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Mountain goat hunting season opened yesterday for registration hunters on the east side of Kodiak Island. That means it's open season for hunters with a permit who didn't participate in the draw hunt, with some additional restrictions. Hunters in areas on the road system, for instance, have to use a bow and arrow as opposed to a rifle. The west side of the island has its own season that started in August. Nate Svoboda is an area management biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He says hunters haven't hit Fish and Game's quota yet for goats harvested, and there currently aren't any closures on the island's hunting areas. That's largely due to the recent blustery weather keeping hunters out of the field.
That's really impacted our success rates, I think, and not only success rates, but just getting hunters in the field. The weather has made it challenging.
The island's alpine lakes are freezing up, too, which also makes float plane access difficult. Fish and Game estimates there are more than 3,000 mountain goats on Kodiak Island. Svoboda says over the last decade, more than 600 hunters annually, both from Kodiak and the ones that fly in for guided trips, have participated in Kodiak's mountain goat season. More information about the season, permits, and hunting areas is available on Fish and Game's website. With only 1 week left to campaign, groups like Get Out the Native Vote have stepped up their game. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride reports, some of the strategies are uniquely Alaskan.
Cook Inlet Tribal Council staffers have been hard at work to learn what it takes to be an election worker.
You'll issue them a ballot, the appropriate ballot for their house district. We'll go over that in a bit.
Jeffrey Congdon is a state election supervisor who normally trains groups of four or five volunteers at a time to run polling stations for early voters. But CITC has 17 staffers scheduled to work this week.
It's right across from the Costco on DeBar, where you can get a lot of errands done at the same time. And we just want to make the community feel like they have a place that they're comfortable in.
Michelle Spark is Director of Strategic Initiatives for Get Out the Native Vote in Alaska, and hopes efforts like these will draw more Natives to the polls. Although the statewide turnout in the primary hit 32% and surpassed the last three primary elections, Spark says the number of voters in many predominantly Native communities failed to reach 20%. She says August is prime time for putting up food for winter, so lackluster turnout doesn't necessarily reflect voter interest, but does point to a need for more efforts to generate turnout in the general. Spark says her group recently met with the Alaska Air Carriers Association to raise awareness about what she calls precious cargo, election materials, and ballots headed to and from rural Alaska that will travel by airplane. Spark says it's important that pilots and airline agents recognize the packaging so ballots don't get pushed aside for other air freight.
Let's make sure all the players are engaged and involved and have all the important dates flagged, and that we're all prepared to make sure that our villages and our Native communities can vote with ease.
Spark and other Native organizations have been working closely with people like Donna Folger in Tanana, a village at the confluence of the Yukon and Tanana Rivers. Folger has run elections there for 30 years, a job that she took over from her mom. Just before the primary, Folger's grandson was killed when he was hit by a car. Voters wondered if she'd be able to handle the elections at City Hall. Instead, she surprised them by opening up her home to voters.
I think the strength of my community helped me do that.
Voters cast their ballots in Folger's living room and kitchen.
They get to have a cup of coffee and pancakes, scrambled eggs, bacon or spam. And we serve them after they did their voting. I think our community is expecting us to have that again in November.
That's why Folger, on a recent shopping trip to Fairbanks to buy Halloween candy, took the opportunity to stock up on bacon and eggs. But when she returned, she got a call from the State Elections Division asking her to hold elections at City Hall, where polling traditionally takes place. She says she hasn't changed her plans to cook breakfast for voters, only it'll be served near the polling site. About 50 voters in Tanana cast their ballots in the primary, And with her breakfast incentive, Folger hopes to double that number come November 8th. Although Get Out the Native Vote doesn't advocate for candidates or issues, Spark predicts that Mary Peltola's fight to keep her seat in Congress will drive the Native vote. She also feels widespread education on ranked choice voting will turn the tide.
So we're hoping that this turns into more of a tsunami when it comes to the midterms. More people will be committed to voting and making a plan to vote by November 8th. A bigger turnout and a good ballot retention rate.
In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
A broadband project that aims to bring on-the-road system speeds to Bethel and other communities in the YK Delta has a new name. As KYUK's Nina Kravinsky reports, it's based on a UPIC storytelling tool.
Oh, you were right there. Yo, put your thingies on.
Roxanne Sadler is surrounded by a group of costumed kids at the ONC Multipurpose Building in Bethel. It's Halloween.
Boom, you did it!
She's teaching them to iHuck. It's like Cat's Cradle. A loop of yarn is twisted around Sadler's fingers, and she's showing the kids how to knit it into a shape. This one's an owl, the hardest one, she says.
My grandma taught me when I was about 8 or 9, and I was ADD, and she was watching us one day, and we were wild, and so she said, sit down.
Sadler says the game taught her patience. Patience is something that internet users are familiar with here in the YK Delta, where connections can be slow and expensive.
So iHuck is a string used to tell stories.
Which is why Bethel Native Corporation CEO Anna Hoffman says it was a fitting name for a new fiber broadband project coming to Bethel.
In the end, what we will have is fiber representing this string as a way to tell our stories from this region out to the world and also to receive stories in.
The new project will lay a fiber optic cable from Dillingham to Bethel. Project organizers say it will bring faster, cheaper internet to Bethel, as well as 9 other communities in the area. Heather Handyside is a spokesperson for GCI, and she was also at the Halloween party on Monday. She says the name was Hoffman's idea, but GCI is on board.
People's eyes here in the YK Delta, they just light up. They get it, right? And so the name is a little hard to pronounce and a little hard to spell, maybe, for folks who aren't of UPIC descent. But the extra explanation, the extra work to make people understand, it's worth it.
The money for the project is coming from a federal grant, and it aims to bring Anchorage plans to Bethel. The project is scheduled to be done by the end of 2024. In Bethel, I'm Nina Kravinsky.
There's a nationwide need for nurses, but it's especially acute in Alaska. The state is increasingly reliant on out-of-state healthcare workers, which is an expensive, short-term fix. In Bethel, a remote satellite of the state's university system focuses on teaching nurses from the community to stay close to home and work in the local hospital. Claire Strempel has this report for KTOO.
It's a frosty Saturday morning, and Amber Bukowski leans into Melanie McIntyre's car to give her a flu shot and a drive-through clinic.
1, 2, 3.
Bukowski pulls off her lavender gloves and has a small bandage ready. McIntyre turns to the back seat to tell her kids it's not so bad.
It's like a mosquito bite or like a little pinch, that's all.
This is one of many flu shots Bukowski will give today. She's putting in hours towards her nursing degree from the Kuskokwim campus, a satellite of the University of Alaska Fairbanks. She's part of the long-term solution to the state's dire need for nurses, Alaska-trained nurses, who intend to work in the state. Twila Elhart is the program's instructor.
We have a huge shortage of healthcare workers here.
Elhart came to Bethel as a nurse in 2015, but became a nursing instructor a couple of years ago. She said that's because she has a passion for seeing students from the region learn to take care of its residents.
I get to see elders cared for by nursing students who are from the same village, and it's a beautiful thing. And I'd love to see that increase.
She says local nurses break down barriers to care because they understand where their patients are coming from.
They want to be here for the long haul. I think you just have an amazing investment, not just in a direct patient care, but into the whole healthcare system.
Bukowski, the student from the flu clinic, got her start in Shivak, where she's from originally.
I started out as a health aide in the Village Clinics and transferred over to be a supervisor and took classes part-time and then ended up in the nursing program.
After final exams in December, she and the other three students in her cohort will take the test to become fully certified nurses in Bethel.
It's a lot of info. A lot of hard work and dedication, but anybody can do it.
Her classmate, Michael Vicente, worked as a public health official for the hospital in Bethel until he started the nursing program 2 years ago.
Well, with my job, I was already doing public health, so this is like the next step into go working closer with the community on a one-on-one basis.
I know.
Out in the parking lot, his presence soothes an unsure flu shot recipient.
Nice job, man. Good job.
He and the rest of the students work closely with the hospital staff to quickly vaccinate community members.
Oh, hey, Cardigan.
Many of whom they can greet by name. Reporting in Bethel, I'm Claire Strempel.
Seagull calls rang through the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage last month for the first time in 2 years. Since 2020, the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention had been held virtually due to the COVID-19 pandemic. As KUCB's Kenetian McLaughlin-Price reports, this year's celebration also included a special performance by the Anchorage Anunga dancers.
Last Friday, Anunga dancers took the stage for the very last performance of Kuyana Nights. A crowd favorite at the convention, Kuyana Nights highlights and celebrates traditional dance groups from across the state. It was a particularly special evening for Anunga dancer and drummer Dustin Unigna Newman. He composed the newest song for the Anchorage dance group. He named the song Kathangas Telagi, Ancestors Dance.
It represents us as Unungak, as an entrance dance, and it brings our ancestors into this space. We always talk about our ancestors are always with us, but this is that visual and that vocal representation of that saying, ancestors, come to this space with us, dance with me, sing with me. We invite you into this space.
The dancers make their entrance wearing traditional regalia, waving bundles of grass in each hand. Newman says this sets the scene for their homelands and replicates the beach grass that dances on Unungam Tanungan, or Ununga land. Although Newman lives in Anchorage now, he says that the melody was born during a trip home this past summer.
It literally came to me on a boat ride to King Cove, listening to this tune. And pulled my phone out, you hear the boat engine like roaring in the background, and I'm just like, and it's very, very faint. And so going off of that is what I had to work with this very faint tune.
Before Kathangas Telagi was created, the group used a Koryak trade song as their entrance dance. The Koryaks are an indigenous group from eastern Russia who live on the coastlands of the Bering Sea. Newman says the trade song was a gift for dance revitalization.
And we have Tilila, which is a Koryak trade song that we've been using for years and as our entrance dance. And so this isn't that replacement, but Kathangas Telagi is saying, this is Ununga, this is our song.
He says that they will continue to dance the trade songs that help bring Ununga dance back to life, but they will now use Kathangas Telagi as their entrance dance. Newman says that Ununga Mtenu expert Dr. Moses Kagitha Dirks provided the translation for the song, and the Anchorage Ununga dancers came up with the dance movements just weeks before their debut at AFN. In Unalaska, I'm Kenetia McLaughlin-Price.
Insight Daily Radio.
From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered. From the art of all things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
Neanderthals are our closest extinct human relatives. Our well-known but often misunderstood ancestors lived between Europe and Asia up to 200,000 to 30,000 years ago. Neanderthals were shorter and stockier, with angled cheekbones, prominent brow ridges, and wide noses. Though sometimes thought of as barbarians, scientists have discovered that Neanderthals in fact used tools, buried their dead, and had control over fire. However many million years ago, battles and fistfights were commonplace, and research suggests that battles between humans could end up being pretty brutal. It makes sense, therefore, that our faces would have evolved in order to take a punch to the face. It also makes sense that the part of our body used for delivering the punch would have had to evolve as well. The study suggests that about the same time we started walking upright, our hands became shorter and square with opposable thumbs. This change has always been recognized as a means for tool manipulation, but recent studies suggest that evolution shaped our hands not for dexterity, but to form fists. Bipedalism allows us more chest room to breathe when we run, and slightly bigger brains suggests greater intelligence. These are unique traits to our ancestors, the Neanderthals and Homo erectus. It took about 100,000 years for the population to reach 1 billion people. It took about 133 years for it to reach its second billion, and 44 years after that to double again. Ecologists predict the world population will hit 8 billion people by 2025. Thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries. Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the third day of November, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 9:28. It will set again at 6:17. That will give us 8 hours and 49 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 36 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 51 degrees. That was set in 1915 and in 1924. And a record low is 11 degrees, set in 1985. Currently 37 degrees under fair skies, 50% humidity out at the airport right now, where they are also registering northwest winds to 16, gusting to 23, and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for sunny skies today and clear skies overnight tonight, with northwest winds to 25 today, gusting to 35, and to 35 tonight, gusting to 55. We're looking for a high of 37, which we are at now, and a low of 26 overnight tonight. For tomorrow, increasing cloudiness, in fact, a slight chance of snow showers between 2 and 3 p.m., then scattered rain showers. High near 37 tomorrow, west winds around 30, gusting to 50. Well, we have an outgoing tide, our tide recently turned in the last hour. Our next low tide will be at 5:15 p.m. here on the east side. That'll be a 2.6-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 11:09 of 7.5 feet this evening. Over on our west side, you have a low tide coming up at 6:03. That will be a 6.2-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 11:46 this evening of 11.8 feet. Mariners, be aware, you have a gale warning for tonight and Friday from Marmot Island to Sitkanek. West winds to 30 knots today, seas to 11 feet. Northwest 45 tonight, seas to 15 feet. For tomorrow, northwest 45 becoming west 35, seas to 15 feet. And for Friday night, northwest 50, seas to 17 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning through tonight. Northwest 40 today in the Shelikof, seas to 12 feet. Northwest 40 tonight, seas to 11 feet with freezing spray. Tomorrow, west 30 in the Shelikof, seas to 8 feet with freezing spray. And for tomorrow night, northwest 50, seas to 15 feet. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a meeting tonight. That will be happening in the Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. Also tonight, the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center will be hosting the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in their subsistence study community data review. They will be serving light refreshments, and it's happening from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. tonight. It's the review of the household harvest surveys that the Kodiak wrote on their Kodiak Road system. It's the first time they've done that in 30 years. And they'll be presenting the draft findings and other information about local subsistence opportunities. Again, that's 6:30 to 8:30 at the Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center this evening. On Saturday, it's the American Association of University Women's annual holiday bazaar. Always a big deal. That's happening from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. here at the Kodiak High School gym. You can enter either through the high school or the auditorium doors. And it's fun for the whole family. Please bring your own reusable shopping bag. Again, that's this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., the big holiday bazaar. Also this weekend, find some time to visit the Aleutic Museum. The ceremonial masks and bearded regalia on loan from the museum in France is going back in November, and they'd like to make sure that everyone has a chance to view them before they travel. These beautiful objects were collected in Kodiak in the 1800s. Visit the Aleutic Museum on Saturday, and you can get free admission to view these special items. There will be a Board of Education work session immediately followed by a special meeting on November 7th, beginning at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room. That's number F140 of the old high school wing. The meeting will also be streamed through BlueJeans, and login information is at the Kodiak Island Borough District's website. That's www.kibsd.org. Look under the Board of Education tab. For more information, contact the Secretary of the Board of Education at 907-486-7566. Today at the library at 3 p.m. is the library's next chess club. Drop in to learn, practice, or sharpen your chess skills in a cozy, friendly environment. No experience is necessary. It's open to everyone. And the library is open 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Thursdays. But due to staff shortages, the library will close at 5 p.m. on Mondays starting November 7th. Fairwind Players is presenting Boo by Pat Cook. Celebrate the spooky season with Fairwind Players and this collection of 13 short plays, each designed to tickle your funny bone and make your skin crawl. It's happening Friday, November 11th and Saturday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium's Drama Pod. Tickets are only $10 for adults and $5 for those 15 and under. Also, courtesy of the Kodiak Arts Council, join Kanakoa and the Kodiak Arts Council Saturday, November 12th, that's a week from this Saturday, at 6:30 p.m. for the Ukulele Outreach Workshop. Work directly with the expert ukulele players themselves and start your journey with ukulele playing. If you're already familiar with the instrument, you can increase your skills and learn some new techniques and strumming patterns. It's an all-level workshop. There are limited instruments available for borrowing, so if you have one, please bring yours. The event will be held at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium's Band Room. To reserve your spot, email Hazel at Hazel, H-A-Z-E-L, at KodiakArts.org. And more information is available at the Kodiak Arts Council's website, which is at www.kodiakarts.org. Galley Tables is looking for a few storytellers for their season opening event. That's happening November 19th. The theme is home again, and storytellers have 7 minutes to tell their story. If you'd like to tell a story, email galleytables@gmail.com. That's all one word, galleytables@gmail.com, or sign up at galleytables.com. Galley is spelled with an E before the Y. Celebrate science, technology, and engineering and math with STEMAPALOOZA, November 1st through 30th. All girls in grades K through 12 are invited to explore this month-long event. Visit Girl Scouts of Alaska's website at www.girlscoutsalaska.org and go to the /STEMAPALOOZA to find details about live virtual programs, at-home activities, competing with your family in STEM trivia, earning a telescope, becoming a citizen scientist, and learning what it takes to put your STEM dreams into action. Try at least one activity to earn your STEMAPALOOZA patch or dive in and try it all. Again, go to the Girl Scouts of Alaska's website for more details.
Are you planning to vote in the November 8th general election? If so, your voting location might have changed since you last voted. That's why it's important to make sure you have a voting plan before Election Day on November 8th. Can't make it? Request a by-mail ballot by October 29th or make a plan to vote early in person. Visit elections.alaska.gov to find your polling place and more. This message paid for by the Alaska State Division of Elections.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.